facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A marvelous Monday to you. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you with me today. The number to call, 1-888-914-9149. Toll free on the Cale Clark Show. You can also hit me up on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. That's my handle. You can follow me there. You can tweet at me there. We also have a show account too, at Cale Clark Show. And the email address is cale@relevantradio.com. And once again, that phone number, 1-888-914-9149. Well, it is Martin Luther King Day today in the United States. Perhaps it was a holiday for you. It's also day one in the week of prayer for Christian unity. And that's kind of interesting. It's also my wife's birthday. Pray for her. She needs it. She's married to me. You know, I'm sanctifying her every day, you know. Matt Swaim, a friend of mine on Twitter, he tweeted about the fact today that it is the first day of the week of prayer for Christian unity. It's also Martin Luther King Day in the United States. And of course, also this week marks the celebration. It's not a celebration. It's actually a tragic event, the anniversary of Roe versus Wade. And what he said about this was as follows. He says, the week of prayer for Christian unity starts today, and I'm struck by how often it includes Martin Luther King Day and the Roe versus Wade anniversary. When we are united in Christ, we can testify mightily to the truth that we are all made in God's image and that no law or prejudice can change that. And that's a good word. That's certainly true. So we need to be united in Christ to stand up against the injustices in our culture, and especially the injustice against unborn life. And so all throughout this week, as we go through this week of prayer for Christian unity, I'm going to be talking about an aspect of it. And a key figure, of course, in this whole week, and a figure that in some ways can possibly serve as a uniting bridge and also sometimes as a dividing wall between Catholics and Protestants, is the figure of the Apostle Paul. Now, of course, Paul is Catholic, but a lot of people want to use Paul or expropriate Paul for all kinds of different purposes. In fact, there are some scholars out there that say that Paul invented Christianity. I'm not sure if you've ever heard this before, but this is quite a common refrain. Paul invented Christianity. In fact, Paul invented Jesus, and that, you know, all the stuff that we believe about Jesus is from Paul. Is that true? Have you ever heard this before? Well, we got a listener question about this, and I'm going to be dealing with that later on. And just to assuage your fears, no, it's not true. Paul did not invent Christianity, and we're going to show you why that's a crazy idea. And so we're going to deal with that later on. We're going to deal with a lot of other fun stuff, too. I'm starting to think I should call my dad and find out if he has the spirit of prophecy, because I'm starting to think I'm either a prophet or the son of a prophet, because, wow, the NFL playoffs are unfolding just as I predicted before the season. My Buffalo Bills are still alive in the NFL playoffs. I'll be talking about that later. And my Super Bowl pick is still intact. We're down to the final four teams. And before the season started, I picked the Bills versus the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl. How about that? So I don't know. Maybe I should go to Vegas. I'm feeling kind of lucky right now. Well, you might feel unlucky if this happened to you. How would you feel if you were told that you just lost $1.3 million in a single afternoon? Now, if that happened to you, you know, most of us would probably be throwing up, you know, but not this guy, not this guy. In fact, the day that it happened to this guy, he lost $1.3 million in one afternoon. Not only did he sleep like a baby, but he had zero regrets. One story I came across this weekend just absolutely arrested my attention. I was just transfixed reading about this. This was the story of the Tesla multimillionaire who refused to cash in a lottery ticket and still refuses to do so. Believe me, I will explain how this relates to the Catholic faith very, very soon, but this was an unbelievable tale. And if you've been following Tesla, the company that obviously produces, among other things, electronic vehicles, it's headed by the enigmatic CEO Elon Musk. You might know that over the past year, 2020 was a terrible year for a lot of people, not for Tesla. Tesla's stock went up 950% since the beginning of 2020. Here's Bloomberg News about this.
Tesla notching up another record today, a gain of close to 8%. It's actually gained about 23% just this week. It's on an 11-day rally, so that straddles the end of 2020 and the beginning of 2021. And you mentioned the share price there, close to $900. Just 103 days ago, that share price was some $200, David. Perhaps that the most emblematic of showing how the we've seen this frenzy in Tesla shares over the last few months, and indeed, of course, the last year or so. The company could soon be knocking on a $1 trillion valuation. It is at about $800 billion at the moment. And I wanted to put that in some perspective for you, David. That means that Tesla is worth more than GM, Ford, Daimler, BMW and Volkswagen combined, and then some. It really is a spectacular rise for the electric vehicle company.
It certainly is. And by the way, my name is not David. It's Cale Clark, and you're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. So that lady with the very nice accent from Bloomberg News was talking about, of course, the rise of Tesla. And this incredible increase in the value of the company has given Elon Musk, you know, enough rocket fuel to launch himself into the stratosphere. He as of a couple of days ago, now he might have been, you know, this thing tends to go back and forth. He was the richest person on planet Earth last week. I don't know if he still is, but he's probably also the richest person on Mars. And of course, he's been wanting to explore Mars with SpaceX, his other company. He could be the world's first trillionaire in the near future. And some people are saying, listen, especially the millennial generation is totally invested in Tesla. A lot of other people, you know, Gen Xers and boomers are like, I don't necessarily buy into this. I think this is going to be a bubble. Maybe Tesla's even going to be a fraud. It's going to, you know, lose all its value. I don't know about that. But this brings me to a tweet that went viral late last week. And I read about this, by the way, on the website of Ramp Capital. I came across this kind of randomly. But this tweet originated from a guy named Jason DeBolt. Now, he's a Tesla fanatic, and his name is quite appropriate for that. Jason DeBolt. Get it? Bolt? Electronic vehicles? Okay. All right. Anyways. He's a 39-year-old cloud engineer. He's worked for Google in the past. I worked for some other startups, some tech startups. And until very, very recently, like as in a couple of days ago, when he officially retired from the corporate world at age 39, he was working for Amazon Web Services. He was working on their cloud infrastructure. Now, he is a long-term Tesla investor currently living in L.A. And in his tweet, he shared a screenshot, Jason DeBolt did, of the fact that his portfolio gained nearly $1 million in one day. This was Thursday, January the 7th. And that brought him up to a total of $12 million at the time in his investment account. Now, he sent that tweet on a Thursday. The next day, Friday, Tesla ripped off another 8% gain. So he got another $900,000, almost another million the next day. Now, this wasn't exactly an easy ride without bumps in the road for Jason, because on September the 8th of last year, he lost $1.3 million in one day. On that day, Tesla's stock dropped 21%. Now, that was the worst day they've ever had since they got onto the S&P 500. And by the way, Jason DeBolt, the only company he invests in is Tesla. He has one egg in the basket, okay? Talk about putting all your eggs in one basket. He has one egg. So diversification is not exactly his thing. And I don't think there's a financial advisor in the world that would tell anybody to do that, to only invest in one company. But we're going to see why he's done this in just a minute. And again, I am going to make a link here. You're going to see how this relates to the Catholic faith in just a minute. I promise. So just hang with me, all right? So now, just to put this in perspective, by the way, he lost $1.3 million that day, but it was only a loss on paper. He didn't actually lose anything in reality because he didn't sell his stock. The value of the stock was down that day, $1.3 million he allegedly lost on paper. Now, if he had sold his stock that day, he would have lost $1.3 million, but he didn't. He held on to it because he thought, no, I believe in this company, and it's got a great future. And of course, he more than recovered his losses, as I told you earlier. So this is a lesson for you and for me, too. because a lot of us maybe didn't grow up with a great amount of financial literacy. And we're going to see why it's important for Catholics to have that too later on. But one basic lesson of investing is never sell into a storm. You know, when the stock market dips, like the big crash in 2008, if you sold all your stocks in 2008, you lost your shirt when the market went down. People have a tendency to panic. They think things are going to get even worse, so I better cut my losses now and sell when the chart line is at the very bottom. Well, no, you should never do that. You know, wait till it comes back. That's the time to buy, actually, according to famous investors like Warren Buffett. He says when there's blood on the streets, that's when you want to buy. When everybody's selling, it's cheap. Buy it. And then, you know, when everybody's saying, oh, you know, this is great. You know, we're in this incredible, bull market. It'll never end. The future's so sunny. We can only go up from here. That's the time when you need to get a little bit nervous and start thinking about maybe selling. But anyways, here's a clip from a conversation that Jason DeBolt had on a podcast called JC Finance and Investing, which he talks about why he only invests in Tesla and why he's so convicted about this company. Take a listen.
For 5 years, I had almost zero returns. I think it may have actually, might have actually been negative, but, and that goes back to just, you know, understanding the value of a company and true intrinsic value of a company rather than just being super focused on the stock price. If you just understand what a company is doing, you believe in it, and you've built your conviction, you've done a ton of research, just buy the companies that are valuable, that are not priced in, that say Wall Street doesn't understand. I found myself in a situation where I was so convinced that Tesla was undervalued that I rolled over my 401k into Tesla. My Roth IRA is all in Tesla. Everything is in Tesla. And so that's, you know, concentration can work if you are very, very knowledgeable of the business and the company, and you have the conviction that's required to hold on to the stock when it gets really scary, when the stock tanks.
So this is fascinating to me. And the article that I read from Ramp Capital, the author said, these are the kinds of stories that are captivating. People who have the grit and determination to buy and hold on to a stock through thick and thin, while having faith in a single company and a quote-unquote godlike CEO, and that would be Elon Musk, in the face of all odds. And again, no financial advisor on the planet would ever approve of this sort of one asset strategy, you know, putting all your eggs in one basket. No way. But this guy is so convicted about the company. Now, back in 2013, Jason DeBolt bought his first shares in Tesla. He bought 2,500 shares, and they were worth, get this, $7.50 per share. Now, that cost him $19,000 at the time. That investment today is worth $2.2 million. Okay, now obviously he went on to buy a lot more stock in Tesla. Now his total value is up to $13 million in his portfolio. But wow, what a steal, you know, in retrospect, right? And so this is how it relates to our faith. This is one thing that he said in this interview, Jason DeBolt. He said, countless individuals have told me what to do with my Tesla position over the years. But I used independent first principles thinking, and I did a ton of research on Tesla. The vast majority of people still don't know about Tesla's mission and where the company is heading. So, in fact, he thinks the stock price should be worth a lot more. He thinks it's going to be worth, in 10 years, he thinks it's going to be worth $20,000 to $30,000 for one share in the company. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's what he thinks. And he's done so much research on this firm. Right now, the stock's worth about $826 per share. He thinks it should be worth $4,000 today. So I'm not here to give you financial advice. I'm not here to tell you go and buy Tesla stock, although maybe you should. I don't know. But what I am here to say is that I think it's really fascinating that even though everybody was telling him, don't do this, this isn't, you know, the appropriate strategy for you, he had absolute conviction that this is the best choice for him, because he'd done all his homework, he'd done all his research, and he was totally convinced that this company is going to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. So how does this apply to our Catholic faith? Why would I bring up the story? Well, number one, it's just a fascinating story on a human interest level. This, like I said, this was arresting. It made me sit up in my chair. And so if you're listening to the show today, if you own a Tesla, if you have driven a Tesla, do you believe in this product, in this company? I've never been in a Tesla. I've never had a test drive. I've never sat in one. Certainly can't afford one. But I just find it interesting. A lot of people say, and Jason DeBolt talks about this. I'm going to give you a little clip from him in a minute, that once you experience the product, you'll be convinced of what the value of this company really is. I'll tell you one anecdote really quickly. A couple of years ago, my dad and I, my dad worked at Ford his whole career, big car guy. So my dad and I and my brother-in-law, Brian, went to the Toronto International Auto Show, huge exhibition. Huge. I mean, the exhibit hall was packed. It was a huge place and it was just full of exhibitors. And it's one of the biggest auto shows in the world. So we were down in the lower level of the convention center and all of the quote unquote luxury brands were down there. I'm talking BMW, Audi, the usual suspects, but also Mercedes-Benz, of course, but also Rolls-Royce, Lamborghini, you know, everything. There were some amazing looking cars there, but no one, not a soul, was looking at any of them, because just down the hall was the Tesla booth and it was packed. Every single person that was on that floor was crowding around the Tesla booth trying to somehow get a peek at their electronic vehicles. Unreal. That was a shocker to me. That really opened my eyes to, man, there is something going on here. So I just think it's a fascinating story, and certainly where things are headed in this world with, you know, electronic vehicles, the governments want to, you know, promote this and give rebates and all this sort of stuff. You know, we seem to be heading to a new reality. This is a sea change in our world. But so just at a human level, it's really interesting to me. But number two, it really does apply to our faith. And I think this can really be true in a couple of different ways. First of all, what the author of this piece that I read, something that he said really stuck in my mind. And he talked about Jason DeBolt investing in Tesla, and he said, I really appreciate people who have the grit and determination to buy and hold on to a stock through thick and thin, ups and downs, while still having faith in this single company and the quote-unquote godlike CEO in the face of all odds. I thought, man, this could be true for us as Catholics. We have to, like Jason DeBolt kind of investing in this one company, we have to have conviction on our thesis about the Catholic faith, that it's true. As G.K. Chesterton said, the only reason you should become a Catholic is because you think it's true. Otherwise, you're just doing it for human reasons. You know, my wife's a Catholic, or my grandfather was Catholic, or I'm from a Catholic country, or whatever the case may be. But the only good reason to be Catholic is because we think it's true. And our faith in Jesus Christ and in his Catholic Church is an investment too. It's an investment in eternity. Talk about a long-term horizon, my goodness. And we need to hold on to that investment. We need to hold on to our convictions that this faith makes sense. And on the reasons why we're Catholic, the reasons why we know it's true, just like Jason DeBolt did all his homework on Tesla. And he didn't care what the pundits said. He didn't care what the naysayers said. He didn't care what his financial advisor buddy said. He had conviction. He'd done the homework. He had studied it for himself, and he owned it. He owned it. He didn't buy stock in this company because somebody else gave him a great tip, a great stock tip. He did the work, and he's convinced that they have competitive advantages, and this is legit. That's why he did it. And we've got to have the same conviction about our Catholic faith. This is why we engage in something called apologetics, explaining and defending the faith. As Peter says in one of his letters, you've got to know the reasons for your belief, and you've got to be able to explain them to other people with gentleness and respect. And it's tough to hang on to our faith sometimes because of the way things appear on the outside. The scandals, you know, if the Catholic Church was a publicly traded company, you know, it would definitely have had some pretty big dips over recent years. The big scandals, the craziness, the public perception of what's going on in the church. This is still the church founded by Christ, despite it all. And in fact, I had a great conversation with a friend over the weekend, a very well-known, very intellectual Protestant, and he was telling me that he's scandalized by the fact that known Catholic politicians, including the person who's going to be inaugurated as the President of the United States on Wednesday, is a known supporter of abortion and yet still receives communion in the Catholic Church. And there's only been a handful of bishops, you can count them on one hand, who have objected to this and would say, I would deny this guy communion for the sake of his own soul. Not only the integrity of the faith, but for the sake of his own soul. And this scandalized this person that the church, that this would go on in the church. The humanness of the church, but this is still the church founded by Christ. Cardinal Newman, I think it was, he said, when he saw the craziness going on in Rome in his day and the mismanagement of the church, he said, this has got to be of God. Why would you say that? Because it's so messed up from a human level. It's got to have a divine origin. Otherwise, it would have ceased to exist centuries ago. So we too have to have great conviction, despite the way things might look on the outside, that this is in fact the church founded by Christ. And there's reasons, really good reasons, why we believe this. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, and we'll be back right after this short break. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We were talking just before the break about this guy who's 39 years old, young guy, no wife, no kids. He's living free and easy. and he invested a small amount of money in Tesla some years ago after going for a test drive and one and saying, wow, this company is going to change the world. And so he immediately went out and bought some stock when it was worth $7.50 a share. And he's now worth over $13 million. His entire investment portfolio is in Tesla. And the reason why he never took his money out and it kept growing and growing and growing, despite everybody telling him, you got to get away from this company, the stock's going to crash, is because he had done his homework and he was convicted that this company is going to change the world. And nothing could dissuade him from his faith in Tesla. And I said, you know, really, we've got to have that same conviction about our Catholic faith, because this is an investment in eternity. It's for a lot longer than this life. Right, no matter what your time horizon is in investments, this world is just a snapshot before a really long game, okay? So eternity is long. Life is short. Eternity is really, really long. And the other thing that Jason DeBolt is doing is he's not selling any of his stock. And a lot of people have asked him, why don't you cash in some of it? I mean, you don't have to sell the whole bundle, but why not cash out $1 million or $2 million or $3 million? And you could buy a private island somewhere and live that kind of lifestyle. He's not interested in that. He's not interested in that. He's still working. I think he just retired, quote unquote, a few days ago. But he said, listen, I'm not planning on selling the stock, and I'll go back to work if I have to. My plan is to hold on to this stock. And he's not even going to sell a little bit of it. And there's an application of this, too, for our own spiritual lives. We could kind of cash in our chips, if you will, and enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin, as the book of Hebrews tells us, for a short time, or we could hang on to our faith for the long game, for eternity. And this is the temptation that we have to compromise with the world. The temptation to give in to temptation, to say, you know what, you know, maybe it's really not worth it to hang on to our faith in the long term. In Matthew chapter 4, of course, we have this dialogue between Jesus and Satan, the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness. And one of the temptations of the enemy is this. The devil took him to a very high mountain, Matthew tells us, and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And he said to him, all these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. Then Jesus said to him, begone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and ministered to him. Now, what was so devious about this temptation is that all the kingdoms of the world and their glory do belong to Christ. They rightfully belong to him. But what the devil was offering him was a shortcut. Cash in your chips now. Just bow down to me, and I'll give them to you. Jesus wasn't going to do that. He was going to play the long game, and people will you know, I will gain control of these kingdoms of the world and turn them into my own kingdom. The kingdoms of the world have become the kingdom of his Christ, as St. Paul says, but I've got to go through the cross and I can't take any shortcuts. And so there's an application there for us too. We've got to hang on. We've got to be faithful despite everything. Delayed gratification. This is something that we have to learn in life, and it's something we have to learn in the financial world as well. And, you know, we try to teach our children basic money lessons. You know, we give them a little bit of an allowance maybe for doing their chores and give them a bit of a choice, saying, well, you could, you know, take these couple of dollars that I'm giving you here to the corner store now and blow it all on candy and have a short-term gratification, or you could save it up and buy that bike that you wanted. The choice is yours. And so, yeah, we can kind of do that with sin. We can kind of blow our inheritance, our spiritual inheritance, and commit some, you know, mortal sin. Be a terrible mistake, like Esau selling his birthright for a mess of pottage, you know, as the scripture says. And so we've got to repent of that attitude and understand that we're laying up treasure for the future, for heaven itself. And speaking of financial literacy, you know, this story really brought that home to me. This is not something that's usually taught in schools. Financial literacy is not something that's usually taught in schools. But it's important to our lives as Catholics, and money matters. Jesus talked a lot about financial issues in the Gospels, and I don't know about you, but this isn't something I really was taught too much about growing up, and I wish I was, or maybe I was, and I just wasn't listening, but it's a spiritual topic. It's not a secular topic for a couple of different reasons. First of all, just in general, spirituality, the spiritual life. Spiritual does not mean non-physical. Now, of course, the spiritual life includes the non-physical, right? Like your soul is non-physical. So many important things in life are not physical, like love. I can't grab onto love. Honor, you know, your personal honor. Angels, of course, they're non-physical. But not everything that's spiritual is non-physical. See, in the Bible, people want to have this dualistic view, body and spirit. They want to separate the two. But in the biblical worldview, there's no such thing. The human person is a body-soul unity. And spirituality does not mean non-physical reality. It means everything. Everything is spiritual, including the physical parts of life. That's why we believe in the theology of the body, that heaven is a place, a real place, for physically resurrected bodies. In our sister program, The Faith Explained, we've been talking about the book of Revelation. We're in the last chapter right now, the new heavens and the new earth, that the new Jerusalem is going to come down out of heaven to earth. There's going to be a new heaven, a new earth, a transformation. God's not going to throw out the creation. He's going to transform it. And we will be raised from the dead, just as Jesus was. And our souls, our eternal souls, will be united with our bodies once again, a resurrected, glorified body, because embodied life is God's plan for the human person. We're not angels in a lot of ways, right? We're not angels. So all life is spiritual, including our financial life. We can't create neat little compartments for different parts of our lives that, you know, this is my thing over here. I'm not going to let God touch it. No, he wants it all. He wants to be the Lord over your pocketbook as well. He's either Lord of all or not Lord at all, right? And we have to, the other reason is we have to prove good stewards of our time, our talents, and our treasure as well. And Cardinal Collins is always talking about this. The theme of his ministry, the Cardinal Archbishop of Toronto, is stewardship. We all want to hear those words at the end of our lives, right? From the Master. Well done, good and faithful servant. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If you want to call in, if you want to react to this topic, give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. And we want to be good stewards so we can hear those words from the lips of our Master. But the treasure is part of it. Time, talent, and treasure. Now, we all have some. Most of us have a little. Some, like this guy Jason DeBolt, they have a lot, relatively speaking. You know, maybe we should call him during our next pledge drive. You know, get him to call in. He's got a $13 million portfolio. But all of us are going to have to give an account, including him, for how we used it, how we used the resources that we've been granted, our time, our talent, and our treasure. And this is part of the deal. So we have to use our financial life to glorify God as well. So that's a big, big, big part of it. We can't compartmentalize our life, and understanding how to manage money from a Catholic perspective is something very important, and it shouldn't be divorced from the spiritual life. And then also experience. In the Gospel of John, we saw this in the Gospel the other day, I believe it was on Sunday, Jesus said to some would-be disciples, come and see. Rabbi, where are you staying? Well, come and see. Come check it out. It's like a test drive. And in some seminaries, they have this program for guys who are thinking about the priesthood. They have a come-and-see weekend where you can go to the seminary, experience seminary life, maybe attend a class, hang out with the seminarians, and kind of get a little taste for it. Come and see. It's kind of like going for a test drive in a Tesla. And here's Jason DeBolt, this Tesla investor, explaining what the experience of Tesla was all about for him in making this choice to invest in the company.
People focus on the financials too much, and then it's like, just experience the car, you know. And once you sit down, you feel the acceleration, you see the minimalist dashboard and how sleek and how awesome the car is, you know. Right. I think experience in the product is a huge part of it.
Definitely.
People like, when I give test drives, you can kind of see it like click in their head. You're like, oh yeah, like this is a future of the world.
I've converted skeptics to buyers. Like when I first owned my car, I owned a 2013 Model S, and you know, I had people that didn't even want to go for the test drive. It was like, just come check it out. And I let them drive it, and they're like, I want one. You know, like,
yeah.
They say I want one. Skeptics usually be like, oh, so how much is this? And you just see their facial expression change. You're like, whoa, and maybe I need to reevaluate my idea of buying a Tesla.
You know, it's often said that the best advertising for any product is word of mouth from people who use it. And I'm going to bring up Karen Moran right now. And Karen, you've got a friend that drives a Tesla, right? And you really can't stop talking about it, right?
You're right, Kale. It's a couple friend of ours. They got their Tesla, I think, 2 years ago. And they live in California, and there was some incentive to do that. And yeah, you're right. It's like every time we see them, well, actually the last time we saw just the husband, he didn't talk too much about the Tesla, but when they're together, it's like the Tesla show. And we're like, okay, you know, but it's true. We've been in it, and that last clip, it's totally ridiculously true. You just have an appreciation for what it is. It changes driving. So yeah. I was thinking, if the Tesla buzz and the curiosity and the thrill of it, if that was equivalent to how we could draw people to the faith, then we'd be doing it right. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm kind of wonkily walking around with my faith, wanting to be the shining Tesla, but I haven't figured it out yet. So.
Oh, come on. I think you're doing a great job. You are speeding on the road towards heaven, Karen. You are like
know,
that sleek Tesla. But, you know, it's interesting, too. Yeah, I think what you're saying is right on. Producer Lucas and I were talking about this, and Lucas made a great point. He said that sometimes arguments and reasons that we have for the faith, when we're trying to evangelize our friends or trying to talk to them, these reasons can only go so far with some people. So Lucas made a great point. Sometimes simply inviting someone to come to Mass, or this come and see, take the test drive, let them experience it, that can be a door for them to recognize the truth and the beauty of the faith. Yeah, I think that's a great point that he made.
The next level of it. It's there's something that when we knew they got the Tesla, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, you guys are always early adopters of stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to a wedding together, a daughter of friends of ours getting married. We're in that category where now we're going to our friend's daughter's wedding, and we drove it together. Well, they picked us up in the Tesla from the airport, and that's true. You get in and you put it on auto drive, and it like catches up. It stays pace with the car in front of you, and it's just, you're in the seat, but it's doing the driving. And when we went to the wedding, we went from Orange County to San Diego, and the traffic was crazy. And so our friend put it on kind of that assisted mode of driving self-driving. And it made it, I mean, it wasn't driving for him, but it made it a less stressful on the 405 freeway. So, Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's pretty sleek.
You can see things are going that way for sure. And so, again, this isn't an investment show.
It's not
and
I'm an not ad telling, for the Tesla.
No, it's not an ad for Tesla. And I've never been in one myself. I've never been in one, but I see the hype. But what's also interesting and how we can relate this to the faith as well. Tesla doesn't do ad buys, as far as I know.
Right.
They don't spend money on advertising. They spend it on the product. And they rely totally on word of mouth. And so people like your friends, Karen, who buy one.
They talk about it nonstop, yes.
They are unpaid advertisers for Tesla. And really, we should be like that with the Catholic faith.
Yes. Yeah.
And we should be so excited about our experience with Christ in the church and the sacraments that we can't help but talk about it. Now, we don't want to be annoying, like maybe your friends are, as you said. Well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe they're listening.
Karen thinks
you're really annoying. No, I'm just joking.
But, we already told him.
Enough about the car. Okay, all right. We know you have a Tesla. Okay. No, but we don't want to, you know, but we really want to whet people's appetite, you know, for Christ. Create that thirst, right?
Yeah.
For that water of life that only Christ can give them. And so, I don't know.
Yeah, I want to bridge that gap too. I mean, yes, it's like you want to be what somebody is curious about.
And, absolutely.
Even sometimes I feel like, you know, I'm the rosary responder, and I feel like people are scared to even talk to me. And I'm just a normal person. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm praying the rosary because I need to. You know, so
that's right. Absolutely. Yeah. We're struggling on the journey just like every one of you.
Yeah.
And so whether that's, you know, it's true for Karen, it's true for me, it's true for all of us. And we need God's grace, that's for sure. And so, as we think about ways that we can, quote unquote, advertise our faith, you know, I think maybe we can learn a lot from some of these companies and how they do it. Anyways, just my
great
two cents
points
on that. And thanks for your insight there, Karen. Well, speaking of evangelists, there was no greater evangelist, no greater advertiser of the Catholic faith than St. Paul himself. But did Paul invent Christianity? Was it all his idea? We're going to deal with that after the break.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. So glad you're with me. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free number to call in. 1-888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show. Man, I had a great weekend. I don't know about you, Producer Lucas, but I had a great weekend because my Buffalo Bills won yet again. 2 down, 2 to go. They beat the Baltimore Ravens. Yeah. Bills make me want to shout. This, of course, is the Buffalo Bills theme song, if you will. They play it in Bills Stadium whenever the Bills score a touchdown. Yeah, and the Bills make me want to shout, I got to tell you. Maybe I should have gone to Vegas in September, because before the season, I was telling everybody who would listen, the Bills are going to be in the Super Bowl this year, and they're going to play against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Man, these are some Star Wars-level storylines. You know, Tom Brady, when he was with the Patriots, he owned the Bills for 20 years, you know, destroyed them. Wouldn't it be interesting if the Bills played Tom Brady in the Super Bowl? Now, still got to get through, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs, the defending champs, but Patrick Mahomes suffered a pretty devastating concussion, unfortunately, in the game against Cleveland, and he may not be under center for the Chiefs this weekend. I don't know. I mean, Chad Henne, I'm a Michigan fan, but Chad Henne is not beating the Bills, I'll tell you that. And I don't know. A lot of people in Green Bay, of course, Green Bay, the home of Relevant Radio. A lot of people are excited about the Packers, Aaron Rodgers, the maestro. You know, of course, Tampa Bay. Tom Brady's got to get through him first. Got to get through the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field before he can get to the Bills in the Super Bowl. So I don't know, but I like my chances. We'll have to see how things go on championship weekend coming up. And I thought it was really funny, too. Tom Brady, who's 43 years old. The Buccaneers were playing the Saints yesterday. Of course, Drew Brees could have been his last game for the Saints yesterday. He's 42. And a fan had made a little mock-up of a History Channel documentary, you know, The Battle of the Aged. The Battle of the Ages, Brees and Brady, and they've kind of been aged to appear even older than they are now. And Tom retweeted that. I thought that was pretty funny. He was being a good sport about that. But anyways, super, super excited about the playoffs, about my Buffalo Bills and their chances. Well, listen, I know I'm an evangelist for the Buffalo Bills, but we've got to talk about the evangelist known as St. Paul. And I got a question, a listener question that came to me from Anne Marie, who's listening over the internet. She asks, "Hi, Cale. I keep hearing through articles I've read on the internet that people say that St. Paul was the one who invented Christianity. not Jesus. Is this true? Thank you very much for your question. I really appreciate that, Anne-Marie. And the bottom line is that no, Paul did not invent Christianity. He became a Christian, in fact, a believer in Jesus and a member of the Catholic Church after things had already got going. Now, a lot of people do think that Paul, in fact, is the originator of Christianity. And we're deep into it. It's the first day. We're almost through the first day of the week of prayer for Christian unity. St. Paul is kind of a key figure because Protestants and Catholics both rely on his writings to form their theology. And so if we can understand Paul right, we should be able to understand what the church is all about, hopefully. So anyways, one thing you have to understand about this is that all the earliest followers of Jesus were Jewish, right? Jesus' mother, of course, was Jewish. All of the apostles were Jewish. And all of the books of the New Testament were written by Jews, except for maybe the author of the Gospel of Luke and the Acts of the Apostles. It's the same guy. It's Luke. May have been a convert to Christianity. However, they did not see themselves as creating any kind of a new religion. They were trying to follow Jesus as the Jewish Messiah, the God who became man. But as things kind of progressed, as the faith began to spread, eventually the church became a separate entity, if you will, from early Judaism. There was, in fact, a break with the synagogue, if you will. And this was already starting to be the case during the life and the ministry of St. Paul. And Paul was a key figure who helped lead the Jesus movement, the nascent church, the young church, out of Judaism, really make that clean break. Not that God necessarily wanted that break to happen, but it did happen. Paul wasn't the inventor of Christianity, but in some ways, as Ben Witherington says, he was kind of the midwife of the faith because he was able to shepherd the faith through this transition where a large number of Gentiles, non-Jewish people, were entering this group, believing in Jesus. And so the big question in the early church, and if you read the Acts of the Apostles, it's really prominent in the book. What do you do with people who are non-Jews, they're Gentiles? For them to become believers in the Jewish Messiah, Jesus, do they have to be Jews first before they become Catholics? In other words, do they have to keep the kosher food laws? Do they have to be circumcised before they can become Catholic Christians? Do they have to keep the Sabbath laws? I mean, the circumcision thing was a huge thing. I mean, you're going to have surgery if you want to enter the church. A lot of people would be like, no thanks. So it could have been a huge barrier to evangelization. And this is really what, in large part, the Council of Jerusalem that's talked about in the Acts of the Apostles was all about. And look at what it says, for example, in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, when Paul says, and this is a famous passage, he says, to the Jews I became like a Jew. Now, he already was a Jewish, so, but he's making a point here. He became like a Jew to the Jew and like a Gentile to the Gentiles in order that by all means he might win some to Jesus Christ. Now, if he still sees himself as organically a part of Judaism, why would he say, I have to become like a Jew? It's almost like he thinks of himself as something else. In his letter to the Galatians, which, by the way, was written about the year 49 AD, St. Paul says, you have heard of my previous way of life in Judaism. It's almost like he left it behind. I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my fellow Jews. He talks about that in Galatians chapter 1. So it's almost like Judaism was a thing of the past for Paul. I'm no longer in Judaism per se. Now, of course, I'm ethnically Jewish, but I don't consider myself to be part of that religion necessarily, at least not fully. It seems like he believes he's something else. And he calls it, this is the way he puts it in his letters. He says, I'm now in Christ. I'm in Christ. And Christ, of course, means Messiah. I'm in the body of Christ. And in some ways, it's like he sees that as something separate from Judaism. So there's really a bridge here. I mean, the church is really, I always say it's Judaism with the Messiah having come. Because God's promise to Abraham way back, and we're going to look at this when we in our Faith Explained program, we're going to start studying the book of Genesis. And when God made promises to Abraham. He kind of pulled him aside and said, you know, I'm going to build a people through you. And eventually, you know, all the nations are going to be a part of it. That was always God's plan from the beginning. But I'm going to start with this one group of people who are going to become known as the Jews. And through them, my truth is going to spread out into all the world. And when the Messiah comes, this faith, this one true faith, is going to be opened up to everybody. This is just the way I'm going to do it. And Paul thinks this is happening now in his time because of Jesus. So lots of changes here. What, you know, with Gentiles coming into the church, how do you deal with the ceremonial precepts of the law? I alluded to this earlier, circumcision. Well, what the church worked out was that Jewish Christians, if they are ethnically Jewish, they believe in Jesus, they no longer had to keep the ceremonial laws of the Old Covenant. They still had to keep the moral law, the Ten Commandments, yes. But the ceremonial precepts, like the kosher food laws, circumcision, no, they didn't have to do that. But they could do so. Now, I don't want to complicate things too much, but Paul actually did do that as a missionary tactic. When he was talking to his fellow Jews, he observed these kosher laws when he was around them sometimes. And he took Timothy. Timothy was a person who had a Jewish mother, but a Gentile father, and he was not circumcised. And he had his companion, Timothy, you got to get circumcised, because if you're going to evangelize these fellow Jews with me, then they're not going to buy into what you're saying if you're not circumcised. So he underwent the operation. You know, wow, talk about commitment to the gospel. But it was not required of people coming into the church to do that. That was kind of going the extra mile, to be sure. So Paul basically says this: you don't have to become first a Jew to become a Christian. And so this was a point of contention in the early church, to be sure. So this is the message of Paul, this radical message of salvation through the crucified Messiah. You still have to keep the moral law, and God gives you the power to do that through the Holy Spirit. But you don't have to keep the ceremonial precepts of the Old Covenant. This message got Paul in a lot of trouble. When he was trying to spread it, he got whipped, he got stoned, he got left for dead, you know, shipwrecked, run out of the synagogue time after time. It seems like, in one of his writings, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, it seems like he was saying there was a contract out on his life set up by some of his fellow Jews. So among the Jews, Paul was kind of seen as an apostate, as someone who had, you know, left behind the truth. But Paul had met Christ, and so he wasn't trying to start his own church or anything like that, his own group. In fact, he made sure that after he met Christ, and he didn't know Jesus during his earthly ministry, he met Jesus after Jesus had ascended into heaven and been glorified already. He appeared to Paul in a vision on the road to Damascus, and that's when his conversion happened. And Paul, one of the things he did was he checked out with Peter, with James, and he made sure that the message he was preaching was the same as what they were preaching. He was under the authority of church leadership himself. And so, no, he wasn't trying to start his own thing. He wasn't the originator of Christianity. Christianity started with Christ, and he was a proponent of it, and he was with the church that Jesus founded, didn't start it himself. So I hope that answers your question, Anne-Marie. I really do appreciate that question. As we get deeper into this week of Christian unity, we're going to talk more about that. We're going to go to a call really quick. Isaiah is calling from Maine. Isaiah, welcome to the show. We've got about 1 minute, so let's make it quick.
Hey, I was listening to your earlier talk on mm-hmm. Tesla, and I was wondering why Jason DeBolt didn't cash in his shares. Or do you happen to know the reason for that?
Yeah, I would say, Isaiah, by the way, we were talking about this guy, Jason DeBolt, who was an early investor in Tesla, and now he's a millionaire many times over, but he's not cashing in his money. And the reason is because he thinks that the stock is going to go up even higher. He thinks it's worth $826, I think, today on the stock market. He thinks it should be worth $4,000, and he thinks it's going to be worth $20,000 or $30,000 per share. So in other words, he's hanging on because he thinks it's got a ways to go yet. And so that's the essential reason. So yeah, it was a fascinating article. It was fascinating to learn about this guy. And I think we've got to have the same convictions about investing in eternity, investing in our Catholic faith. It's worth it. It's worth it. The eternal rewards are worth it. And it's not unspiritual to think about that. the rewards that Christ can give us in eternity. Really want to thank you for tuning into the Cale Clark Show today. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. We'll be back tomorrow. Trending with Timory is up next. Really want to thank Lucas Holt for producing, Karen Moran for working social media, and hey, taking those test drives in your friend's Teslas, right? She'll be back later tonight for the Rosary Across America along with Father Rocky. Want to thank Patrick Alog for screening the calls. God bless you. Take it away, Michaela. I'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.